Good morning, self-lovers. Welcome back to the Self-Love Show. Hi, I'm your co-host, Dawn Light, and this is my beautiful sister, Trish Wright. We are coming live to you today, and we have a great topic today. I'm going to introduce our topic and Trish in just 1 second, but I just want to say, in case you're new to us, thank you for tuning in. And we have an amazing 3 years worth of content on YouTube. Go check it out and go share the podcast platform. We're everywhere you could possibly imagine, all the things. And we would just love to benefit your life with all the self-love topics that have come through. We've had some amazing guests over the years and more to come. We're so excited. The show is evolving. Yay. And it's such a blessing to do this work with every week and such an honor. And self-love is such a rich and rewarding topic because it is the heart of God's expression in us. And we just long for you to have a richer, rewarding, more deeper experience of self-love in your life, in your relationships, in every area of your life. And so we explore all the topics on this show. And so we welcome you. We welcome your, hey, what about this topic? You know, and so don't forget to leave us comments, likes, shares. This is how we grow. This is how we support you. And we want to know what we like this feedback. So thanks for hearing that out. And without further ado, we have an amazing topic today. And I know that everyone has experienced some form of this in their life at some point. So Trish is going to do the honor today and share really deeply from her heart about people pleasing. And who doesn't want to know more about this, right? So do you often find yourself going to great lengths to please others at the expense of your own well-being and truth? Ouch. So it's time to break free from the cycle of people pleasing and start living a more authentic life. By prioritizing your needs, values, and honesty, you can cultivate healthier relationships and rediscover your true self. So without further ado, welcome Miss Trish Wright. And for our viewers, Trish graduated yesterday. She walked the stage and she got her AA, and I'm so proud of her. Such a proud moment. So amazing. So congratulations. And can't wait to hear what you have to say, beautiful.
I love that you love me the way you love me. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You know that most of my work is rooted in codependency recovery. And it has been for a long time. And maybe our viewers don't know that, but that's one of the foundational practices of the foundational teachings of my practice. And it really does look like living in one's sovereignty, one's freedom, one's honest expression of life. Mm-hmm. And it comes from, I'll tell you a little story, actually. It comes from my own experiences growing up in a society that teaches us that love is sacrifice. We live in a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant belief structure that teaches us that if you love someone, you sacrifice and you compromise for that person. And it's actually like that is all sort of rooted in a hierarchy and a control mechanism and service of a higher person. Like it's a hierarchy around human beings. And what that often creates is a dynamic of control, of self-sacrifice, of, gosh, what else? I mean, I find it, in my personal opinion, that it's not conducive to healthy relationships. Healthy meaning like balanced and evolving and growing and in a creationship where things have their foundation. I'm not saying that feminine masculine polarity stuff like that also has value in a way, like it has value if it's coming from your true authentic heart, not from obligation. And that's what I want to talk about today is obligation. I want to talk about blame and shame And I want to talk about sovereignty. And I want to talk about honesty in a sense of full disclosure being loving.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And I'll tell you a story. This is where I got here. And I know that you know my story, Dawn, so this is all recap for you. You know, I had a lot of really interesting relationships as I grew up. Starting with like learning from my family and then society's sort of belief systems, you know, like that were impressed on me that I'm supposed to contort and serve men and like be pretty and not, you know, like, you know, I mean, just like you. And then there was also these pieces around like, oh, Disney's a whole thing, being saved by a man. God, I'm still teasing that crap out of my brain. It's like, ah, why is that there? And then there's also the traumas that I experienced in relationships that really stuck with me. So the way that I would people please, contort, or try to be the person that would be lovable. Mm-hmm. To get love, to be in relationship. And I did multiples of those in my lifetime, starting with my first boyfriends and then into that partnership where I was going to get married to that man, where I contorted myself into a box to be loved. Mm-hmm. And how did that end? Do you remember?
Oh my gosh, how many women, let's just speak honestly to this piece right here, what you just said, it didn't end well, but how many women have experienced this in their life of, you know, contorting yourself or denying a part of your wants and needs to, you know, pretend to be somebody maybe you're not fully being to be accepted, loved, cared for, or meet that person's potential standard of the way they think relationships should be, right? That's so, yeah.
Both men and women do that.
It's so tender. It's so tender.
Both men and women do that. They do it in very different ways, and it's a socialization. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by a socialization is that I mean that society sort of teaches us through guilt and shame to behave towards a social norm. So like if you're polyamorous, you probably have seen some of these things like, oh, like people will shame you for being a generous lover, like not even sexually, just a generous heart, open lover. Oh, that person's rah, 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 rah. Or dude, that does their partner know? Like there's a lot of like specific kind of shame there. But men and women do it in interesting ways. So, well, I could get into this. I'm not going to get into it. Anyway, these relationships for me, this last one, turned out really, really abusive. Mm-hmm. I contorted and became submissive because he wanted someone who he could lead. I didn't know what that looked like. He wasn't safe for me. He wasn't emotionally safe for me. And then I would say, yes. When I meant no, and he's like, are you serious? And I was like, yeah. And then I would have a reaction because it was so inauthentic to who I was. Mm-hmm. I didn't want that. And when I said no, he would yell at me. So I said, fine, okay, I will do the thing. I will say yes and just have to stuff it. Anyway, so you see how people-pleasing, contorting of oneself, the self-sacrifice is a self-abandonment.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's a self-abandonment of your true self. Now, there's a difference between people-pleasing and service from your authentic self, right? When I love to give. I love to give service when I can. And like thinking about, oh, you know, Dawn loves her coffee in this certain way. I don't, you know, like, can I do it in this certain way that would make her smile in the morning or make her life easier? Can I pack her a lunch? You know, like service where it comes from, like my delight, not because, oh God, I got to pack Dawn's lunch. Oh,
obligation is, ooh.
Yeah. I've got to like look a certain way and be a certain way for Dawn to love me. Like if I'm feeling
a man to love me.
Or a woman
to love me, or a boss to be accepting of me.
My dad, my mom, my children, right. You know, it's.
Yeah.
So what I really want to say today is this piece. If I'm people pleasing, if I'm saying yes to something that I mean no to, if I'm saying no and I mean yes, if I'm actually not being honest about what is real and alive for me, I'm essentially gaslighting the other person, which means that I'm manipulating reality for my benefit. And I know this sounds really weird because you're like, I'm people pleasing so that this person will do the thing. That is a manipulation. I'm people pleasing so that he won't be angry or she won't be angry. That's also a manipulation. It's a controlling of a reality, right? So if I people please Dawn and I'm saying, she's like, I want you to balance on your head and pick your nose at the same time. I mean, these are just random, right? And I say, okay, I'll do that for you because I don't want her to be angry with me, or I don't want her to disengage or ignore me or whatever. Then I'm not being honest. Now, I understand that some of these places are really dangerous to not people please, especially if you are in a hyper abusive relationship. If you're in a hyper abusive relationship, please reach out. We can find help for you to help you either help you kind of unravel that sort of abuse in your brain. There's resources for you to get out of that relationship if you need help there, or if you need a mentor or a guide. But what I am talking about is like people who are choosing actively to be in this sense. People pleasing is a lie. So what also happens is that
it's a deep place of inauthentic truth. It's not your truth. You're operating from an inauthentic place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I had another coach reach out to me the other day, and they were asking me about this sexual indiscretion of we were just kind of bantering about an unnamed anonymous client. And it occurred to me. So we victimize and we villainize people through that shame social thing that we do. And so the experience was, there was a couple who opened their relationship up, became swingers. And he was like really enjoying the experience. She wasn't so much, and she would say, hey, I'm not really into this, but still continue to do it. Now, what happens when a person does that is that it's really confusing. Like, oh, I don't like it, but I'm willing to do this thing. So she's contorting and people pleasing towards his needs. And then when she has a reaction afterward, he's like, I don't really understand what's going on. So now neither person can actually trust her no or her yes. She doesn't trust her no enough to say, no, I don't want to do that, and remove herself from the situation. He doesn't trust her no because her yes means no and her no means yes, mm-hmm. and everything in between. So now they're both in a lock. Say that again.
State of confusion.
Oh yeah. So they're both in a lock where it's like, I don't know where to go. Can I move forward? Trust is broken. And the first trust that's broken is with herself. Mm-hmm. Is this making sense?
Absolutely, yeah.
The integrity has to be shifted here before the relationship can be more trusting and evolving and growing again. Mm-hmm. Now, I know this is really, really spicy to say all of these things. I'm aware of how hot this could sound, and how there's no shame on any side from me. It's there's accountability, and there's taking and getting back into integrity. There is no black and white here. And I know that it's messy. So if you're finding yourself in a people pleasing situation where you're contorting and bending to appease someone else, just get really clear why you're doing that. What is the purpose? and recognize that this is a control mechanism. You're doing something to meet a need. What is the need there? And then really find yourself, where in it is this your authentic expression? Is this how you want to live your life? Is this what is nourishing to you? And if you're in a relationship where your partner is sort of like, your partner is sort of like expecting you to contort now, because after however long you've been doing this contortion and you're deciding not to, things are going to that's going to shake shit up, right? Just a little breath here.
Yeah, I can honestly say, just to give you a moment, for me, how it showed up for me, it took so long to shed this pattern for me. But I learned this very inauthentic pattern, learned in my childhood, really around not fully allowing myself. I would people please in scenarios around work. Because it was like I needed to show up in a certain way because I was so afraid that it was not going to be there to support me. And so I would find myself in scenarios saying yes to things that it didn't really want to be doing or agreeing to, but I was so afraid of my need not being met that I would say yes to it anyway. Yes. And that was just so painful to watch that play out in my life, and really a learned behavior truly when I sat with it and really examined it. And it was all in order to heal. And I will admit this, fully disclose this. It was all in order for me to heal the deep place of unresolved emotional material, all having to do with emotional neglect around when I was very, very young and watching my mother just, God bless you, Mom. I know you did this because you needed to at the time in your life. And I have no anger or resentment or regret for that time and what happened in my life. But my mother needed to leave a toxic situation with my father. And she was still married. They were still having a very toxic engagement. And she would leave the house in order to go work and to go find her sense of happy and her sense of freedom and her sense of empowerment. And that was her place. She found it. And so it was ingrained in me that I had to leave home, leave my family, abandon my family. And that pattern did play out in my life. It was so painful. Now it's not playing out anymore because I've addressed it and really worked on it for years now. And, but really it was all stemming to surface that unresolved emotional neglect of the pain and the sorrow I had of my 7-year-old feeling really, really wounded around, oh my God, Mom, don't abandon me and leave me here with this person that is absolutely going to beat me. And that, I learned that a woman needs to chase money for her happiness. It was so unconscious, the choice that was made by my unconscious, and my ego just played that story out as it was real. And it backed it up with this very foundational thing of my needs are never met. My needs are invisible. And so it played out this whole story of, I have to chase money. I'm never sure. That's just not true. And now as a adult done a lot of inner healing, and thank God for USM and spiritual psychology work, because it's helped me crack the code on the deepest egoic patterning that was really hidden from the conscious self. And this stuff has just surfaced, and I bawled and cried and met it and loved it and forgiven it and healed it. And it's just a game changer on every level. And so that people-pleasing narrative of I have to show up and be the person you need me to be, even though my needs aren't being met, was a part of that. And it was all about where in the work paradigm for me is where it showed up.
How many, who's listening and watching right now? Like, think about that. Think about your childhood. Think about your work situation and your relational situation. Like, again, we're taught in society that love is sacrifice and love is compromise. And it doesn't have to be that way. Like, yes, there are actually like probably close to 8.1 billion people on this planet now. And that means that there's at least 8.1 billion realities on this planet, give or take, you know, people who have multiple realities. But saying that, it's like what we get to do is not to compromise ourselves, but to learn how to negotiate how to live in reality together. You know, when we're children, we don't know any better. We don't know, like, we're there learning from our parents, learning from society, learning from our children, how to behave and how to get our needs met. Mm-hmm. So people pleasing is a strategy to get your needs met, mm-hmm. right? This is how it works. We learn strategies and we keep using the ones that work. So if you're a child and you learn that if you cry, you get food, guess what you're going to do when you are hungry? Right? You're going to cry. So when we start to find out that people pleasing works to get our needs met,
it starts work for a while.
Well, it works.
It's your childhood coping strategy and mechanism at play, yeah, until it's become conscious in the conscious mind and you start to actually commit to laying down the need to behave that way.
Many people never get there. Yeah. Again, the religious belief structure around love being sacrifice and love being compromise, mm-hmm. you know, it can be fairly mm-hmm. difficult to tease out unless you're actually looking at it. And you're looking at it every day. Early on in my kind of like unraveling or like defiltering codependency, I started to, and you probably remember this. I had this sticky note pasted on my wall here that said, "Allow your thoughts to rest on self."
Beautiful.
And it's not, and I want to like kind of define why it's not selfish, because there's, I mean, selfishness is fine as long as you're being honest about your agenda. like I need to take care of myself. So what I mean by allow your thoughts to rest on self is a sense where, I don't know about you, but I was taught that if I'm not thinking about others all the time, that I'm selfish, inconsiderate, I'm a bad person, that thinking about this is a bad thing. Mm. I don't know about anybody else, but this particular thing has caused so much issue in my life because I didn't take care of myself. I was always giving or over giving to a point where I was suffering.
Consuming your heart, mind, and thoughts with other people's needs.
That right there, consuming my mind, my heart and my thoughts with other people's needs. Meaning like now I'm giving all my money away in certain ways or spending or over gifting. And like my life is falling apart constantly. But I'm like, but I'm doing the right thing. Why isn't God showing up for me? Mm-hmm. So when I put allow your thoughts to rest on self is that, you know, it was after a couple breakups, after this breakup with this person that our relationship was incredibly emotionally abusive on both sides. Physically abusive. And then I dated another person who also wanted a lot from me. He wanted me to contort for him because that showed him that I loved him. Remember, do you see what I'm saying here? Can you hear it? Mm-hmm. He wanted me. I mean, I'm not going to put it on him. I've also wanted this in my life, right? I want someone to contort and people please to show their love for me. Anybody else like has had that experience of both wanting it and receiving that? Yeah. And when I went after this second breakup, I was like, I am literally obsessed with this person right now. And I am not taking good care of me. So I really need to sit back and ask myself, what is the most self-honoring choice I can make right now? How do I take better care of me? Because I'm not taking care of me and I'm not taking care of the people that I love. What's good for this body? What's good for this brain? This life? What is good here for this so that I can take care of the people that I love?
I was going to say self-honoring choices are the way forward to start to break the unhealthy patterns. When you start to ask yourself and lean in and make your choices from a very inner place of like allowing the voice of God, your inner counselor, to come forward and ask, how, you know, show me how to make a self-honoring choice in this circumstance, you're going to get a higher answer, you know. And this is how I detangled from a very long history of doing a toxic job I hated for a lot of money, but it was causing me and my family so much heartache. There was so much suffering that incurred around that dynamic that I couldn't make self-honoring choices because I felt like I didn't have any other options. And I was just blind to making those self-honoring choices until I was fully ready to really see it. And then I started moving into that place inwardly and choosing, okay, I'm going to make change here. I'm going to start taking the workshops. I'm going to start committing to the classes. I'm going to start committing to myself and showing up differently and moving the energy, moving the dial and letting go in these other places. And I had huge periods of letting go before the real relief fully came in to where my life looked radically different. There was a long period of it was just me surrendering and letting go and being in the unknown and not certain and not sure and navigating this wide terrain of like, okay, God, when is the shift going to come? Because, you know, a lot of times we can make really strong prayers and we're ready for God to show up for us right then and the change to come. But the truth is the healing is taking place. And you have to stay in the faith of that and keep making those self-honoring choices daily, like moment by moment. Is this the most self-honoring thing I can do for myself to change this pattern?
And the thing about go back, listen to that piece. And and the other one is that you have to be honest about what you're doing. So if I'm like, let's say I just people pleased you for the last like 10 years, we've been married for 10 years, relationship, friendship, we're in a work relationship and I people pleased the bejesus out of you for 10 years. And I just decide that I'm going to make self-honoring choices. What do you think is going to happen?
An explosion.
It's going to come out of the blue. It's going to come out of the blue. So if I say something like, hey, Dawn, there's places here. Here's some radical accountability here. Hey, Dawn, I've been lying to you for the last 10 years about things that I've wanted to do and what I've not wanted to do. And I was afraid that you'd not love me if I didn't do the things that you wanted me to do. So I contorted, I people pleased, I did these things, and now I don't know who I am.
Wow.
I need to start taking better care of myself so I can truly love myself authentically and therefore love everybody else authentically. Now, if we can take accountability like that, I know that's pretty high level accountability taking. And if you want to learn that technique, you can reach out to me, right? It's a practice. I've been practicing for a long time. But if you heard the difference and how connected, you could see, even though this is a kind of like a made up scenario, you can see how she literally leaned in, like her body leaned in. Her face changed. Because when you take accountability for how you are showing up in your conflicts, this is where intimacy can be created. Now, I could play the victim, and the victim sounds like this. You're always taking from me and I'm always giving to you. And, you know, I just don't know who I am. And I, you know, like, I'm just overwhelmed and I need to go away. Like, that's a victim role. That's making Dawn the perpetrator. But I'm, in fact, really invested. I'm really invested in my relationship with Dawn. And I actually want to have a relationship where it's healthy, where it's communicative, where it's balanced. I don't want to make her the bad guy. I don't want her to make her the victim. I'm not going to be like, oh, poor thing. I don't need to
No one's a victim.
No one's a perpetrator. I don't need to play out the victim triangle. What I want is to be as honest and radically honest, lovingly, caringly, thoughtful in my honesty with you or with anybody. And I'm inviting our listeners to actually like be vulnerable. So sharing the vulnerability. Do you hear what I said? What I wanted. I was afraid. I people pleased because I was afraid you wouldn't love me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? That person might come back and say, you're right. I wouldn't have loved you. Because I wanted to fall in love with the feelings that I got from you, from your contortion, instead of falling in love with who you are. I needed you to be something.
Or who you are.
Exactly.
No one gives us feelings. The feelings come from within.
You know what I'm saying? I love that thing.
I was going to say, I can speak honestly about another portion of this deeper curriculum that I've navigated. And, you know, my parents had a very narrative, when I was young, witnessing them always fight. They fought a lot. And, I witnessed them fight majority of the time about money. And, so there's that narrative of feeling unsafe around money that created that structure for me to feel like I have to, it's outside of myself. It's overwhelming. It's not available, like, or all the story around it, you know, that was created in my younger years. But the hidden piece, which is I find is very interesting, you know, you'll learn when you like study deeper about psychology, you'll actually learn that one of the children in the pecking order, if there's multiple children in a household, will actually act out the family secrets. And I just happen to be that person in my family pecking order. I was the youngest. And I was the wild one. I was the rebel, the one that was like, I'm not sweeping any of this stuff under the rug, and I'm here to make everybody see it all. And that I played that role of awakening for my family. And I was also, you know, categorized as the scapegoat in therapy. But so it's interesting because that dynamic of sex and money, as much as I rebelled against it, fled my household, moved a million states away because I was like, I don't want anything to do with this. This is not my reality. And I was consciously choosing that as a child, right? And like in my younger years, like not mine, don't want it. But it was still so ingrained in my consciousness as trauma. And guess what plays out? Even though I had broke the cycle of abuse and married a very beautiful, generous, loving, unconditionally loving man, I still had this narrative that was undercurrent, subtly affecting our relationship. And that played out. And how I started to face it and dissolve it and make change, which ultimately ended up in a full role reversal. Because I had this narrative of like, it's not safe to trust a man, especially to be, you know, provided for. Like, you know, fully provided for. And yes. So I had this really, you know, I had a tug of war going on inside of myself around it, which created a tug of war in my relationship around, you know, here's this beautiful man that's showing fully up, wanting to be fully supportive, but I can't see it because I've got this narrative going on, you know, and it, that whole story, even though it was showing up so differently for us, it wasn't the same way it showed up for my parents. But the moment I really started to lean in and ask, what are the unconscious agreements that we have playing out between each other? And what are mine? Where can I own what I'm co-creating with spirit in this? And it's not him doing it to me. I'm creating this. My unconscious is creating this painful dynamic that we want out of, we want to make change in. How do I do it? And so I started leaning into these deeper questions inside myself. How can I make self-honoring choices around what's coming forward? And how can I take full ownership of creating this? And I started to have to be lean in to have the really radically honest conversation around, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I have not really fully trusted you. It's really rooted in, I don't trust my father.
And I don't trust myself.
And I don't trust myself. Yes. Not anymore. I do trust myself now. But through a lot of, you know, I mean, I've now been in the USM manager field 7 years. And so it's been a very powerful 7-year period of deep transformation for me. And, you know, trust was at the core foundation of it for me. That's been my quality I've learned to embody all along. And that was a game changer and really instilled like full trust in my relationship. And when that started to arrive inside myself is when everything started to shift in my actual outside structure.
Exactly.
It was in me. And I want to say one more piece about taking accountability on the outside. You're doing it on the inside, but you have to do it with your beloveds in a very verbal way where you actually own your behavior and say, oh my gosh, when I do this, and show up this way, I can see that I'm creating the tension between us in this way. Or I'm co-creating this. I'll just use me as an example. I'm creating a sense of distrust when I panic about a bill. And then I make up a story in my mind that you can't come through for me or for us. And I shame you, wrong you, blame you. And then it sends me into, this is the narrative that went on for me. Then it sent me into a spin out and I had to go all of a sudden flee the nest and go fly 2 states over and go work for a week straight just to feel a sense of ease and comfort to cover that bill. And I'm so sorry I created that narrative. That's how you make change.
Thank you, Dawn. Yeah. Do you see how Dawn created the narrative of her victimhood and then made everyone else the perpetrator? We are taught this. Like, this is a learned behavior. Do that.
Well, I just discovered the whole thing. So that
we're
mentality to the actual taking ownership piece.
Oh yeah. I'm working on it.
Yeah.
I'm like getting so 1,000-foot view walking in. So we're taught that society thing. We're taught that victimhood is a really powerful role.
The imprints imprint us with this curriculum. It's our soul curriculum. What we learn in our family unit becomes our curriculum.
It's also society.
Yes. Right?
Society teaches us all these things. So on a social level, we are taught that victimhood is a powerful role because we can get what we want by not living in our power. Like one of Bridges, my coach, one of Bridges, like big lessons for me. I don't think she'd ever say it's exactly like this, but it really is like, oh, if you're going to be a victim, own the power of that. And I was like, oh crap, you know, or you can do what Dawn did and actually take accountability for how your victimhood controls and manipulates the situation. Or if you are on the other side and you're really like, I'm going to say something, another spicy thing. Or you're on the other side and you know that you're pushing your agenda and you're pushing it really hard and you're doing it on purpose to get your needs met. Own that too. So I've often laid in bed at night thinking about this correlation between using empath, the term I'm an empath, as a power control mechanism. It's a power play. Sometimes like, oh, I'm an empath and now I don't have good boundaries because I'm feeling your feelings. And I don't, you know, like I've often thought that. And I was like, wait, that's actually the perpetrator role. To not be honest, to not actually like to knowingly commit to manipulating reality, to use the victimhood or to use these like, I'm someone slighted me and I don't say anything to them about it. I don't actually take accountability that I'm not being honest about my boundaries or taking control of my boundaries, that I'm actually choosing to be the perpetrator in this situation. And I mean, I'm not blaming anybody else. I'm not putting it out there. I've done this. It took me a long time to be like, oh, the reason why my life is showing up is because I'm showing up in this very specific way. Mm-hmm. One of the things that Bridge said to me that was really powerful a while ago, she said, I don't understand. I'm going to butcher. It's not verbatim. She's just like, I don't understand why you don't fight back. Why is Fawn your first go-to? And I was like, wow, good question. She's like, isn't your life worth fighting for? Like, isn't your life worth living, or is someone's life more important? And I was like,
wow. Transformative.
And I was like, everybody's life is worth fighting for and living. She's like, so start fighting for your life. And I was like, oh my Lord.
And yes. Powerful.
When you're people pleasing and when you're not being honest, you're not
in your power
for your life. Mm-hmm. Now, if someone steps on my toes, I'm going to say, hey, you stepped on my toes. I'm not going to be like, oh, I'm sorry. You stepped on my toes. It was my fault. I mean, maybe it was my fault, but we can talk it out now. Like, this is the thing about like spiritual evolution and evolving as society, is that we have to take accountability for our actions. Like, we really get to choose to change things by taking accountability for how we engage in it, how we either people please, contort, or project out. I want to take ownership of this thing that happened. I'm going to take it out right now. It's like, so I've been really sick. I finally got a diagnosis, y'all, but I've been really sick for almost a year, right? August would be a year. And I got really hurt that none of the people that my lovers in my life had were calling me or reaching out to me. And it occurred to me recently, that is also a victim role. I was like, oh, they love me. Why wouldn't they do them? And I was like, I didn't text them. I was like, I didn't text them. Like, if I needed something, it was on me to say, hey, I could really use some cuddles. Hey, can you text me? Mm-hmm. Just to check in. And the people that I did do that to, guess what they did? They checked in. And that takes accountability for my needs. I'm taking ownership of that. And I'm not projecting these things onto anybody or making them a perpetrator or myself a victim or myself a perpetrator or victim. I'm just saying, hey, Dawn, can you give me a call? Can you actually, don't call me. I don't like calls. Can you text me occasionally just to check in to see if I'm like, I might be a depressive, sad, angry weirdo and I'm scared, but can you just check in on me? And give me an emoji or a meme just to say, hey, I'm thinking about you. And guess what? People do that. People want to love you in the way that that you want to be loved. But you got to tell them. It's a powerful role.
It is a powerful role. I just wanted to put the voice out too, for if you're in a long-term relationship and you've dealt with a lot of places of power plays, taking play, difficult curriculum surfacing, and you're in a place of, you know, you want to grow at a deeper rate and deeper place and shed the stuff that's in the way so you can have that rewarding, deeper, richer, heightened new level in your marriage and relationship. You don't have to be married, but, you know, long-standing relationship, or if you have, you know, been in many relationships and you're looking to better yourself, and this conversation strikes a beat in your heart of like, gosh, there's something here for me to more investigate and you need that, please don't hesitate to reach out. This is the work I do. I coach couples. I work with couples. I work with women. And just so here to support you in awakening what this stuff is, because if I can do it and make major change in my life, like major, then you can too.
So I'm going to go into a little practice around self, around people pleasing and how to tease it out. Y'all, what I want to say is that I know that we're saying a lot, and I know that this one's a pretty spicy call. And it's important to, it's important here to be really kind with yourself, right? When I tell you that this is a socialization, I'm trying to say to you that, hey, we're all kind of going through this thing. Like, codependency is taught in our relationships. This is what it is. This is how we're supposed to do it. And there's a lot of religious ties to that. There's a lot of political ties. There's a lot of like society and how societies are built ties to how relationships are built and how we play them out. And it takes some time to actually step out of the victim perpetrator triangle, because that's also something that we're taught. And it takes a level of self-compassion that's incredibly important here, right? It's deeply important to, as you're walking through your self-love journey, to really commit to self-compassion. And because this work is so deep, because it's shadow work, because it's actually addressing your wants, needs, and values and the strategies that you've created to get your needs met. And some of them can be a little like shockingly dark, like some, like the things that I found out about myself and how I learned to manipulate reality to get my needs met were shockingly dark. Like, wow, I had no idea that's what I was doing. Now those strategies are still there. And I often see that I do them. Thank goodness it's taken like years to actually pull that, rein that in. So I'm telling you these things just to be like, hey, it's going to take time. Be gentle with yourself. You don't have to be like, okay, that's great. Good job. Like, you know, and like pat yourself on the back for doing the thing that you don't want to do. But to be gentle with is like, oh, hey, you did that thing again. I know it's a habit and a pattern and it sucks. Go take accountability to the person and get back into integrity with the person that you did that to, even if you feel like the victim, and then come back. Hey, how do I want to change that in the future? Again, taking accountability, responsibility for how we work these things out. So what I want to share with you now is, gosh, there's two things I want to teach you. I really want to teach you the self-empathy tool because it is my favorite, but I've taught this a zillion times. So people who are watching, listening, probably have heard it. If you haven't heard this one yet and you're new, please go find the self-empathy tool, reach out to me. I will give you the video. This one's incredibly important because it will help you understand how you have created your strategies to get your needs met. You start to learn how to tease that out. But what I want to walk through today is a little guided imagery. So if you can, if you're not driving, if you're driving, keep your eyes open. If you're not driving and you can take a couple minute, close your eyes moment, just lean back in your chair and close your eyes. Relax your jaw. Take the tongue off the roof of your mouth. Relax your shoulders. Let your sit bones really like dig in and be held by whatever you're sitting on. Relax anything around your ears, your neck, your chest. Take a deep breath in all the way down to your pelvic floor. Just focus on being here. Focus on your breath. Going in your nose or in your mouth and out of your nose or mouth. Feel the stretch in your lungs as you breathe in. And just for a moment, think of just a few ways that you've abandoned yourself by people pleasing. You don't have to pick the hottest things, the spiciest things, or the most painful things. Just a couple things. Even today. Now, if you can trace it back, let your brain do all the work. Through your timeline, see maybe when you started that. Maybe as a kid, a child. And if nothing's coming up, don't worry. Just hold on to that vision of what kind of self-abandonment happened now, in this now time. But if you can, trace it back. Now, when you get there, see your now self, your adult self, the self that's listening here right now, the self that feels connected. And grab your hand and look at you, whether this is your younger self or your just a little bit younger self today. Your hand on your chest and say, I'm here with you now. I am here with you now and I'm not going anywhere. Now let your brain do all the work. But from here, from wherever you are, with your younger self or with your now self moments earlier, allow yourself to see how your life would change, what decisions would have changed, what things would have happened. If you just spoke your truth, honored your needs, and created strategies to negotiate reality with another person without abandoning yourself, without contorting. And let that brain do the work all the way through this timeline up to this moment. Now, when you get here, take a deep breath in. Let it settle in your nervous system. Now, imagine what your life would be like if you stopped people-pleasing and you started being honest, lovingly, compassionately, kindly with yourself. With other people. When you said yes when you meant no. Or said yes when you meant yes. And no when you meant no. What it would be like to take accountability for how you create your reality with others. And imagine yourself asking for what you want from a person instead of becoming resentful or angry. I know this is a courageous part, and I know that you have capacity to do this. I'm taking a stand for you right now, a stand for your freedom and your future. For your life. This is the choice where you get to take a stand for your life. To fight for your life and your love and your freedom. And the freedom of everyone else. So let your brain go. Let it reach the end of your life. And how your life has changed. How much more authentic you are. Living in your integrity. How much more love and honesty and vibrational connection, heart-centered connection you have in your life. Now bring all of that back into your now brain and body and let that settle in your nervous system. Let that settle on each and every cell in your bone marrow, in your brain. And know that this is possible. Just in a moment. I'm going to ask you to take a deep breath in. Breathe out. Start coming back to this space in this room, your space in your room. And I'm going to invite you to make a self-honoring choice today. Just one. And then it can be two tomorrow, three the next day. But all you have to do is this. Start just with one. How can I allow my thoughts to rest on self? What does this body and brain need? What does this spirit need? If I can take better care of myself, then I can take better care of my children and my partner. If I protect myself, then I can protect my children and my friends. My life, my work, my creativity. So taking a nice deep breath in it. Bringing all the parts back into your body and your brain, and coming back now into this moment.
Thank you for that beautiful gift. Beautiful. Beautiful offering for our audience. Yeah.
You know, all this is a practice. Again, we get to practice every day, and knowing that you're going to make mistakes and practicing how to come back into connection is a really, really helpful tool. Reach out if you want to know more tools about that, how to come back in after connection or after conflict, because this is really where relationships and intimacy is created. We get to choose to show up in the way that we show up. Oh, thanks, Danielle.
Thanks, Danielle.
It's speaking to your needs. So speaking from, I need this, or this is what I would deeply desire. Speaking about what you fear and being really honest about your agenda is going to change your life, right? So if I say, hey, Dawn, I want a hug. I'm afraid that if I ask for a hug, you're not going to give it to me and I'm going to feel alone. And my agenda really is to get hugs from you. I'm going to find ways to do that. So that gives her choice, right? And everybody from choice, it's a powerful place to be loved from choice. It's a powerful place to love from choice. Yes. Rather than being contorting or from obligation or from people pleasing from a theoretical point. Mm-hmm. How am I supposed to know what you want? Oftentimes, I don't know about you, but a lot of my people pleasing was like really unfounded and it didn't work the way that I wanted it to work. It actually just backfired most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to leave you this with this one piece. Is that if you can think about loving, about honesty, radical, compassionate, kind honesty is a loving act. One of the things that I love to say is, honor me with your honesty and let me figure out how to work that out.
Beautiful.
Because there's a lot of dishonesty in the world and your radical honesty is going to set you apart. And I want to make a distinction. There's a distinction between radical honesty, which is loving and kind and disclosing, and brutal honesty, which is cutting and harsh and intended to hurt, right? Brutality versus being radical. Just to make that distinction. Okay. End rant. I'm done. Do you have any other kind of thoughts on this topic, Ms. Dawn?
I mean, it just could go on and on and on, you know, keep sharing stories of our own journey. I just want to give encouragement, you know, if you have experienced really deep places where you've self-abandoned, abandon yourself to meet others' needs, you know, because people-pleasing is always about self-abandoning. And self-abandonment can show up in so many forms in relationships. And I just want to give encouragement to, you know, just because this is maybe still taking place doesn't mean it has to forever. And this is where you get to be really, really tender, kind, loving to the part inside that still needs to do this for this time or whatever this has been for you. It's personalized to your personal curriculum, and it will always have a place that you can follow it back in time and really explore where that arises from and why your unconscious made choices at that time in your life as a coping strategy to be created in your now moment that's showing up in your now adult relationships. And so if you're desiring to do this work, Trish and I both do this, you know, in our practices. And I just want to say, hey, be bold, be brave. We don't know your suffering until you reach out to us and say, hey, I want some support, or can you point me in the right direction? We're so open to supporting your needs and supporting you to get the work done that you're desiring, your outcome you're truly desiring, the better relationship, the happier outcome. Like, we want this for you. We do this show to support your life evolution and our own, because it's joyful and it feels good and it's nourishing. And we want this for you. And so, you know, it takes a level of bravery to finally say, you know what, enough's enough. I can't, this is a pattern. I see it's a pattern. And I'm the common denominator. I'm ready to make the change. And I'm going to be brave and bold and say yes to me in a place that is so scary. You know, and I get it. I've had to do the same for my own spiritual path many, many times. And in order to heal the deepest stuff that, you know, you've heard my story, it's not been easy, but I can honestly say the rewards are, the fruit of the labor is beyond so sweet. So sweet. And I just want to give you encouragement to keep going and to keep finding more and more ways to love yourself, make self-honoring choices, choose yourself, choose a good therapist, choose a good coach, reach out, participate in workshops, you know, go for the gold in your life because you are worth it.
Yes. And you don't have to do this alone.
You don't have to do it alone.
It's easier if you don't do it alone. Just saying.
Yes.
I wish someone would have told me that before. Like, this idea that we have to do our healing work and be messy and icky is like,
well, and the truth is you get so much growth faster when somebody else is in your sphere going like, hey, what about right here? Look right here where your blind spots are. And then they're like, and then you have this aha around like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize.
That's true.
And that's the beauty of having support.
That is the beauty of having support. All right, y'all. Thank you so much for being here and listening and, you know, choosing your growth constantly. I see you. We see you. We see you choosing you. And it's a courageous path of self-love. Now, I want to say thank you to Scott Thomas, Love Coach Academy, Global Peace Tribe, KPFZ, and Sign Network for sharing us out and being amazing, loving humans in the world, sharing the messages of love, peace, gratitude, and conflict resolution, and nonviolence, spreading love in the world and light. Thank you to our beloved, beloved team, Roy, Russell, and Marvin, for making Self-Love Show happen every week and being really rad. Thank you, Dawn, for your just sweet friendship and showing up as well. It takes a lot of work to show up every week. It really does.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does.
Thank you to our listeners and viewers for also showing up for you. For you. We love you. And we will see you the same time, same place next week. Take care.
Yay!